Welcome to Learning English from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Today on this show, we have reports from Brian Lynn and Ashley Thompson. Later, Ann Ball brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with an American story. We hear the final part of The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. But first, here's Mario Ritter.
The word juche is used almost everywhere in North Korea. But it is a difficult concept for many outsiders to understand. It is, in many ways, a word for a political ideology. The English translation is usually given as self-reliance. But to observers of North Korea, juche can seem more like a religion. It appears to inspire North Koreans and is a representation of state power. North Korea has often used the term in speeches to the United Nations. During earlier speeches, the officials called nuclear weapons the treasured sword of Juche. The August test of a new rocket launcher was praised as the rapid development of the Juche-oriented defense industry. Juche is even used to count the passing years. This year is Juche 108. That is because it has been 108 years since the nation's founder, Kim Il-sung, was born. The 170-meter-tall Tower of Juche Idea was built in 1982 for Kim Il-sung's 70th birthday. Guide Cho Hae-ok shows visitors the tower. He has a definition he shares with them. If one believes in the local people and relies on them, one will get the universe. This is exactly the meaning of Juche. Some observers believe Juche has gotten new energy under leader Kim Jong-un. He is the third generation of his family to rule North Korea. He has increasingly taken part in meetings with world leaders over his nuclear weapons program and the international sanctions crushing his economy. The country is heavily dependent on outside aid, however. South Korea, for example, has spent about $5.8 billion on North Korea aid and economic projects through a government program established in 1991. South Korea's Export-Import Bank of Korea operates the program and says the goal is to support inter-Korean relations. Kim Jong-un has made the development of nuclear weapons and economic development the two top issues of his rule. Juche is used to describe efforts toward both goals. There is a debate among outsiders about what exactly the term means under Kim's rule. North Koreans, however, have little doubt. Kim Chang-kyung is department head of the Social Scientists Association in North Korea and an expert on Juche. He said, "The essence of the Juche idea is that man is the master of his own destiny." Understanding North Korea, he said, is impossible without understanding Juche. All the achievements of the country are linked to the idea, which forms the guidelines of the party and state, he said. As he works to explain Juche, Kim, the North Korean social scientist, compares it to another very Korean word, kimchi, Korean pickled spicy vegetables. Kimchi was created in our country, but for us, it is just kimchi. Nobody uses another word to describe kimchi, Kim said. I'm Mario Ritter, Jr.
Felda Williams is a politician from the American state of Arizona. She was over the age of 40 when she was first elected to public office. She says some people did not believe she could do her job. Williams says those people did not trust her abilities because she is a woman. She said the people who worked for her acted like, in her words, "You probably don't understand. This is probably too overwhelming. There are too many subjects." Williams says she dealt with the situation by proving those people wrong. She has been an elected official for more than 20 years. But even today, she says, reporters do not treat her the same way they treat male public officials. She says reporters talk about her shoes, her hair, and her age. They do not make note of such things when they write about men in similar positions, she says. Williams adds, "What really irritates me is when it's a woman who's written the article." Debbie Walsh directs the Center for American Women and Politics at Rutgers University in New Jersey. She says female politicians continue to battle stereotypes, unfair and untrue beliefs about groups of people. The difficulty begins with stories about what female politicians look like, what they wear, and how they speak. Walsh says that during the last U.S. presidential election, candidate Hillary Clinton received criticism for not smiling enough. But male candidates did not smile much either, says Walsh. Neither does current U.S. President Donald Trump, she adds. The attention given to how female candidates look, instead of what they will do if elected, hurts their chances of winning, Walsh says. She notes that men are usually believed to be qualified and capable of holding public positions. But women have to fight hard to be taken seriously. Some female candidates face threats that men do not. Activist Erin Schrode ran for office in California in 2016. She said people attacked her online. They made sexual remarks. Some said she only had her job because she was good-looking. Others said no one would vote for her because she was not good-looking enough. Bias against female politicians does more than just hurt the chances of the women themselves. Society loses when women do not have power to make decisions for the public, says Arizona official Felda Williams. Women have compassion, Williams says, and not only for people, she adds. I think that's all missing if it's just left up to men, she says. Erin Schrode agrees. She says the public needs all voices, including those of women, to make good decisions. Thank you.
the creator of a popular mixed dog, the Labradoodle, has expressed great regret at inventing the breed 30 years ago. Australian Wally Conran was working as a breeder of guide dogs in 1989 when he received a special request. A blind woman needed a guide dog, but her husband was allergic to Labrador Retrievers, a breed commonly used to assist humans. Conran got to work. He carried out tests on more than 30 poodles. Such dogs do not cause allergy problems because they have short, non-shedding fur. Conran's aim was to find a poodle that would be an acceptable guide dog. But his efforts were unsuccessful. He said all the ones tested had either physical problems or behavior issues that ruled them out as guide dogs. So he got the idea to crossbreed a Labrador Retriever with a poodle. Conran found the crossbreed to be the perfect dog for the couple. But today, Conran has major regrets about starting the breed. He recently spoke about his feeling toward the Labradoodle in a podcast produced by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Conran noted that the dogs have developed problems related to poor breeding history. Years ago, he said he had no idea the dogs would grow to become so popular throughout the world. "I opened a Pandora's box and released a Frankenstein monster back in the 80s, Conran said on the program. Conran's breeding was successful, and his experiment resulted in 3 puppies, the world's first Labradoodles. One of the 3 tested non-allergic. That puppy was sent to his new home in Hawaii, where the blind woman lived with her husband. Conran said he was surprised at how difficult it was to find anyone to take the other 2 puppies. Many people did not like that they were crossbreeds. So Conran decided to create a special name for his creation, Labradoodle. He went to the media to get publicity for this new dog. It was a gimmick, he said on the podcast. They were crossbred. Nobody wanted them. But everybody wanted a Labradoodle. Same dog, different name. What followed was a flood of publicity and requests for Labradoodles from all over the world. Demand for Labradoodle breeders grew. Famous people, including Jennifer Aniston, Tiger Woods, and Christie Brinkley, became proud Labradoodle owners. Even President Barack Obama's family considered a Labradoodle before choosing a Portuguese water dog for the White House. Conran said he is saddened that irresponsible breeding has led to problems for many Labradoodles. He said he believes that most of the dogs are either crazy or have a hereditary problem. He did, however, add that he has come across some nice Labradoodles that are similar to the ones he bred in the past. But they are few and far between, he added. The Australian Labradoodle Association of America addressed Conran's comments in a statement on Facebook. The group said the Labradoodle is a much more developed dog today than it was back in 1989. The organization admitted that irresponsible breeding does happen. Some breeders ignore health or breed standards. The group urges people seeking Labradoodles to go through registered breeders who keep records on their dogs. The organization said many Labradoodle owners enjoy the dogs because they are very friendly and highly social with their humans. These qualities, combined with being non-shedding and allergy-friendly, make the Labradoodle a good choice for many American families, it added. I'm Brian Lynn.
Today, we answer a question from Imad. He writes, I would like to know the difference between what do you do and what are you doing? When do you use both? Imad. Dear Imad, those are excellent questions. One question is about a person's work or profession, and the other is about what action a person is doing at the moment or in the near future. We will take the work example first. Imagine that you meet someone at a party. The person asks you, "What do you do?" What they mean is, "What do you do for a living?" or "What is your profession?" You would answer them by stating the kind of work you do, like this. I am a writer, or I am a doctor, or I drive a bus. Now, on to the other question. Maybe you get a phone call and your friend asks, "What are you doing?" They are not asking what you do for a living, but what activity are you doing at that time? Your answer might be something like this. I am reading a book. It's great. Or, I am cooking dinner for the family. Sometimes the question, what do you do, may include a day or period of time. For example, someone may ask, what do you do on weekends? In this case, they are asking what activities you usually do on weekends. They are not asking about your profession. Here is an example of what you might say. I usually take things easy, go out with friends, or do other activities like exercise or go for a run. However, when you add a time period to what are you doing, you are asking what activity the person is doing at a specific time in the near future. Here is an example. What are you doing after work today? One might say, I am thinking of going out to dinner. Do you want to come with me? And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Ann Ball.
The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. Part 5.
I was stunned. Auguste Dupin, my friend with the extraordinarily sharp mind and observational powers, still had surprises for me. He had uncovered so much about the horrifying Rue Morgue murders that it seemed there was more understanding than mystery left. But still, the major question remained. Who? Dupin had invited someone to our home. Someone he believed knew the answer to that question. As we awaited his arrival, my friend began to put together other pieces of evidence from the crime.
We add for our consideration the condition of the room. So we have a strength more than human, a wildness less than human, a murder without reason, horror beyond human understanding, and finally, a voice without a recognizable language.
A cold feeling went up and down my back. A madman, Dupin. Someone who has lost his mind. Only a madman could have done these murders. Dupin smiled a little.
Ah, but madmen come from one country or another, don't they? Their cries may be terrible, but they are made of words, and some of the words can be understood. Let me help with one more clue. Look at this hair. I took it from the fingers of the old woman. Is this the hair of a madman?
Dupin handed me the evidence. I could not believe what I was looking at, or the feel of it in my hands. Dupin, what is this? This hair is not from a human at all.
I described it only as hair. But also, look at this picture. It is a picture of the marks on the daughter's neck. The doctor said these marks were made by fingers. Let me spread the paper on the table before us. Try to put your fingers, all at the same time, on the picture, so that your hand and its fingers will fit the picture of the marks on the daughter's neck.
The marks left by the killer's hands were enormous. My fingers seemed like twigs in comparison. Dupin, these marks were made by no human hand.
No, they were not. I am guessing they are from the hand of an orangutan. The size, strength, and wildness of these apes is well known.
And the hair and strange sounds would complete the solution of killer animal as well. Yet, I still do not understand the second voice. We know it was a French-speaking man. His only words were, Mon Dieu. Who spoke, Dupin?
Upon those two words, I have placed my hopes of finding a full solution to the crime. The, my God, was an expression of horror. It seems improbable that the speaker of those words helped the orangutan. Could he instead be its owner? Maybe the animal escaped from him and he followed it to the house on the Rue Morgue. I assume that the man would not have been able to recapture it.
Is that who we are waiting for now, Dupin? The Frenchman? How did you reach him? My friend smiled when he answered.
I put an ad in the newspaper. Read it yourself.
I took the newspaper. Caught, early in the morning of the 7th of this month, a very large orangutan. The owner, who is known to be a sailor, may have the animal again if he can prove it is his. But, Dupin, how can you know that the man is a sailor?
I do not know it. I simply suspect. A sailor could go up that pole on the side of the house. Sailors travel to faraway lands where one might find an orangutan. And it would be valuable. The sailor would want it back, so...
Finally, Dupin, we learn the whole truth.
Come in, my friend. Come in.
Slowly, the door opened, and there, before us, stood a sailor. He spoke in French.
Bonsoir.
Good evening to you too, my friend. I suppose you have come to ask about the orangutan.
Yes. Is it here?
No. We have no place for it here, if you can prove it is yours.
But of course I can.
A shame. I wish I could keep it. It is very valuable, I guess.
Well, I want it back, of course. I will pay you for your trouble to find it and keep it. What is your price?
Well, that is very fair indeed, but it is not money I want, sir. My price is truth. Tell me everything you know about the murders in the Rue Morgue.
The sailor's face reddened deeply. He jumped to his feet. For a moment, he stood and stared. But then he fell back into his chair, trembling. His face grew pale, his eyes closed, and he said not a word. Dupin then spoke softly.
My friend, you must not be afraid. We are not going to hurt you. I know very well that you yourself are not the killer, but it is true that you know something about him, or about it. You've done nothing wrong. You didn't even take any of the money. You have no reason to be afraid to talk and to tell the truth. It is a matter of honor for you to tell all you know.
So help me God. I'll tell you all I know. About a year ago, our ship sailed to the Far East, to the island of Borneo. The forest there, the jungle, was thick with trees and other plants, and hot and wet and dark. My friend and I wanted to explore the strange place, so we did. There we saw the orangutan and caught it, and it returned with us to the ship. My friend died on the passage home, so the animal became mine alone. I was keeping it in a cage in my house here in Paris. I planned to sell it very soon. One night, I came home, and it was loose. It had got free, I don't know how. It held a knife in its hands. It did not know of its dangers, of course. It was playing with it. As soon as the animal saw me, it jumped up and ran from the house. I followed. It ran several blocks and turned a corner. When I made the same turn, the animal was out of sight. I looked far down the street and saw nothing. Then I heard a noise above me. There was the beast, climbing a pole up the side of a house. It was maybe 2 meters up. I also went up the pole. As I am a sailor, it was easy for me. When the animal was close to the top, I saw him jump through an open window. I got to the same place, but could not make the jump. I could see into the room, however, through another window, which was closed. The two women were sitting there, looking at papers from a box on the floor. The animal, knife still in hand, made a noise, and the old woman turned. That is when I heard the first of those terrible cries. I watched with horror as the animal attacked. Soon the two were dead, and the room was a disaster. The orangutan then pushed the young woman's body up the chimney. It picked up the other victim then and moved toward the window. I realized what was coming, and I fled. Down the pipe, I scrambled. At the bottom, I heard the old woman's body hit the ground. I ran. I didn't look back. I ran. Oh, mon Dieu! Mon Dieu!
The police in Paris could not charge the sailor. His only wrongdoing was silence, which is not a criminal offense, the police chief said. However, the official did have a problem with Dupin. He was angry that Dupin, and not a member of his force, had solved the mystery. He said people should mind their own business.
Let him complain. He'll feel better for it, and maybe learn something. Perhaps he will never again say not possible about that which, somehow, must be possible.
That's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.